Now from the KSFR newsroom, at noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Thursday, July 18th. Federal sequestration cuts are forcing the closure of two Head Start centers in Santa Fe County. The closures were announced by Presbyterian Medical Services, which oversees the programs in four counties. Federal funding for Presbyterian's efforts has been cut by some $700,000. Shuttering their doors now are the Chimayo Head Start Center and another on the Institute of American Indian Arts campus. 10 other Head Start centers in Santa Fe County are not affected. A new federal tip line has been created by the U.S. Attorney's Office in our state that allows anonymous reporting of suspected drug trafficking in northern New Mexico. Billboards displaying the TIP-411 texting number will now be going up throughout Santa Fe and Rio Arriba counties, where federal authorities say drug traffickers have set up shop. Espanola, just north of Santa Fe, suffers some of the highest rates of heroin abuse in the country. An overall improving economy has contributed to a rise in home sales in Santa Fe, according to new data presented by Santa Fe Association of Realtors President Victoria Murphy.
We've risen up from 2012, 4.9% in our median price, and we've also did an increase in our home sales of 4.4% from 2012. And the really great thing is while our home sales went down in Santa Fe County, they actually were up on a rise in El Dorado, and the median price there in El Dorado jumped significantly by 16%.
Murphy also says current inventory is low, and Santa Fe is entering a period of a strong seller's market. The State Board of Finance has greenlighted a $20 million loan to New Mexico's Spaceport America for the building of two downstate visitor centers. Today's Albuquerque Journal says the deal may be finalized within 30 days and construction could begin shortly thereafter. Spaceport will make repayment over 21 years at a 3.8% interest rate. The loan proposal received unanimous support at the Board of Finance's Wednesday meeting, although there was discussion of concerns that the state could get stuck with the bill if the centers do not draw the 200,000 visitors a year currently projected. Wednesday's meeting of Santa Fe's Charter Review Commission saw some tweaking of their proposals to make the city's mayoral post a full-time position with an annual salary of some $150,000. The commission is expected to present its recommendations to City Hall at the end of the month. The changes to the mayor's job could not take effect until 2018, as it would first have to pass muster with voters in a municipal election. Those, by the way, are typically held in March, with the commission now set to recommend that they be moved to autumn. New Mexico's Family Infant Toddler Program, also known as FIT, has for the third year in a row received high marks from the U.S. Department of Education. That agency ranks New Mexico among the top 25% of states, successfully meeting requirements across 14 performance indicators. The FIT program provides comprehensive early intervention services, including developmental, speech, physical, and occupational therapy, to more than 13,000 New Mexico children from birth to the age of three. 34 provider agencies statewide are supported by a blend of federal, state, and private monies, totaling more than $18.5 million for fiscal year 2014. AAA New Mexico says pump prices rose in our state and across the country this week. The statewide average for a gallon of regular unleaded gasoline here is now $3.57, up 15 cents from last week and 25 cents higher than a year ago. The surge in prices is being attributed to more expensive crude oil costs and political unrest in Egypt, given its proximity to the Suez Canal and its oil traffic. And weather for Santa Fe, partly sunny both today and Friday with highs near 80 degrees. There is a 40% chance for afternoon and evening thundershowers today, increasing to 50% tomorrow. Overnight lows in the upper 50s. Meanwhile, the current Santa Fe temperature now 73 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At noon on KSFR, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
At noon on KSFR, now segues to today's feature stories. Legislative leaders in New Mexico have been trying to address the matter of job creation here in our state. Even with some recovery, employment has not yet come back to pre-recession levels. Earlier this year, lawmakers created the Jobs Council. They hold their second public meeting in Albuquerque tomorrow. Joining us to talk more about the initiative is Speaker of the House Ken Martinez. Mr. Speaker, the hope is to determine the extent of job creation that has to take place over the next 10 years to return us to levels not seen since the economic downturn. Tell us about that.
Sure, and you just said it. We have created a jobs council so that we'll be thoughtful about what we need to do to create jobs in New Mexico to get us back on track from the recession that we suffered through. We went into the recession late, but we're also coming out of it late. And we believe, as a legislature, with a bipartisan council, that we need to be very smart and strategic about what we need to do to bring good economic-based jobs to New Mexico. And the first thing we need to do is figure out what that number is. How many jobs do you need? And that means how many folks do we believe will be here over the next 10 years? How many economic-based jobs do you need to drive that economy so folks have good jobs and the spin-off jobs from that service sector and things like that are available? And how many would you need, you know, each year throughout to the 10 years? Then once you get that number, you decide how to get to that number through the different job sectors, and then you look at the geography of the state and what's available.
It would seem that the lion's share of your task is to figure out which employment sectors are going to show the largest growth over the next decade. Is that indeed part of your equation?
Yeah. Now, tomorrow, you know, we're taking this one step at a time. The first step was to define the problem and exactly what we're going to tackle, and we're doing a very focused review of creating a kind of a jobs architecture for the state of New Mexico for the legislature to act upon. Doing that, one of the first things you do once you agree upon that to create this structure of analysis, the first thing you do is define the problem. That's what is the deficit of jobs, and that's the number of jobs that we need to create. Probably the next meeting we'll look at what jobs are out there and look at new and emerging jobs. As everybody knows, the job marketplace is changing rapidly throughout the world and in the United States, and New Mexico needs to keep a pace of that.
There have been reports in recent days that have said New Mexico may see many jobs available here, but our workforce may lack the education and skill sets needed to fill them unless they have at least some post-secondary education. Does the Job Council look at those educational factors?
Absolutely. That's just a great question. And as you see, this is kind of a whole question that involves all facets of governing and government and life. So a good jobs economy requires a good educational system. So that's very important. But you also have to have some strategy and targeting in that regard. One of the things that I've learned that is a good idea, and I intend to introduce legislation about it, is we now have concurrent enrollment that allows the young adults in high school to start getting college credits while they go to high school under the high school class loads and paid through by the K-12 system. It really works very well. It's great for our colleges, great for the kids. Kids can get out of high school now with a two-year associate's degree if they plan it right, because they can take college classes that give them high school credits and get that dual credit. It's just absolutely wonderful opportunity. But we can expand upon that with vocational training, because right now vocational training is the most expensive training you can do in schools. As budgets got tight, of course, what did they close? They'll close some of the shop classes, you know, electrical classes, engineering-type classes where you're doing the hands-on stuff. It's more labor-intensive and more equipment-intensive. Well, there's a possibility we can start doing a concurrent enrollment through some of the journeyman programs. So would it be pretty exciting for a person to go to high school but also do a concurrent enrollment into a journeyman program where they would come out with certificates in construction, carpentry, electrical work, things of that nature, so that you actually start training the workforce earlier, you give them more opportunities to follow their interests, and you also get them ready to go into a job of their choice, and hopefully those jobs are available and ready to go.
And of the Jobs Council created in this past legislative session, is it a permanent entity or does it require reauthorization each year?
Yeah, it would require some reauthorization. What we wanted to do was to focus on this very strategically. We found that jobs were the number one issue. Sometimes we get hung up on what become more like national, social, political issues that obviously sometimes are just wedge issues. And unfortunately, those take a lot of time away from what we really should be doing, which is focusing on those things that matter most. Which is right now, it's jobs. Having a good paying job for New Mexico families is really what we hear is the most important thing people are looking at. So we should take that, jobs, create a very smart group of folks to take a look at that, get information from the experts across the board and throughout the state, and try to see how the legislature can best act upon that.
Thank you, Ken Martinez, House Speaker of New Mexico, for joining us here at noon. By the way, that public meeting in Albuquerque tomorrow begins at 10 a.m. at the Duke City's Carpenters Training Center Auditorium. Public comment begins at 3 p.m. At noon, we'll be back in just a moment.
Ebullient mezzo-soprano Susan Graham performs a title role of Jacques Offenbach's riotously funny The Grand Duchess of Gerolstein this summer at the Santa Fe Opera. All's fair in love and war games at the Gerolstein Military Academy, with its dashing uniformed cadets and apple-cheeked local sweethearts cheering them on, with the Academy's patroness, the Grand Duchess herself, in sexy pursuit. Far from being a lady of a certain age, this Grand Duchess is an amorous aristocrat with an eye for Fritz, her favorite young cadet, sung by the dynamic American tenor Paul Appleby. Soprano Anya Matanovic completes the love triangle. Emmanuel Viomme conducts. The Santa Fe Opera's Grand Duchess of Gerolstein promises lots of laughter and fun. Learn more about this production and the entire upcoming season by visiting santafeopera.com or by calling 800-280-4654. That's 800-280-4654. This message is sponsored by the Santa Fe Opera, a tax-exempt organization.
Back in late June, we heard that the State Human Services Department had been informed that 15 New Mexico providers of mental health and substance abuse services failed to meet standards and overbilled the federal and state governments by tens of millions of dollars in Medicaid payments. That set in motion a protocol by the Human Services Department requiring that payments cease until the matter is fully investigated. In the ensuing weeks, there has been a growing rancor from both the public and state lawmakers as some 30,000 New Mexicans wonder if their needs for such services will continue to be met. Joining us in just a moment will be New Mexico Attorney General Gary King to talk about the issue's most recent developments. But first, let's go back to KSFR's June 27th interview with Matt Kennicott, the Director of External Affairs for the state's Human Services Department, as he provided us with an overview.
Late last year, I think it was October of 2012 or so, one of our partners, Behavioral Health Partners, Optum Health New Mexico, brought us some significant findings from some desk audits and other work that they had been doing with a new tool that they implemented the first part of 2012. These audits raised some major concerns for us, so we contracted with a company called Public Consulting Group, or PCG, to help us conduct a more thorough, in-depth audit. The results of that thorough in-depth audit were released earlier this week, and there were some significant findings. To summarize those findings, you know, we're looking at potential overbilling of roughly $35 to $37 million, with some potential allegations of fraud there. There were some findings that showed that CEOs of some of these nonprofit behavioral health companies were paid excessive amounts, and their family members were perhaps paid excessive amounts as well. So the findings are very very serious. We have a duty as a state to not only protect how taxpayer dollars are spent and recoup any funds that were perhaps paid out potentially fraudulently, but also to protect the services that that we provide to some of our most vulnerable citizens. And make no doubt that these providers are providing services to some of our most vulnerable citizens, and it's about 30,000 people that they're providing those services to. So we, upon compiling those audit findings, as required under federal law, we turned over those findings to the New Mexico Attorney General, and he now has those findings and is conducting a law enforcement investigation.
The matter was the subject of much discussion at Wednesday's meeting of the state's Legislative Finance Committee. Speaking there was New Mexico Attorney General Gary King, who joins us now. Sir, it's our understanding that the Human Services Department has no recourse but to suspend payments to the providers, pending the outcome of the investigation of possible fraud. Can you speak to that and what was discussed at yesterday's meeting?
Sure. Well, and we've been studying that issue, and we had a long discussion yesterday in front of the Legislative Finance Committee about different options that may be available. I think that it is correct that once the agency, in this case Human Services Department, makes a finding of what they call credible allegations of fraud, and once they've been referred to the Attorney General's office, the federal regulations require that there be what they call a pay hold, so that all of the funds stop. And then the question is, what can be done once the pay hold is placed? One of the things that will occur, and this is definitely occurring in our case, is that the Attorney General's office will investigate the cases, and if we find that there's reason to move forward with some action, we'll notify the department and do that. If we find that there's not sufficient evidence to move forward with anything, we would notify them, and then they would remove the pay hold. There is some discussion about the department's capability of finding what are called good cause exceptions under the regulations, where the providers can send a letter to the agency and say there are certain good cause reasons why you should lift the pay hold during the course of the investigation. And one of those, for instance, is that they're providing services in an area where there are no other providers and this would cause a problem. One of them is sort of a catch-all that says that if the Medicaid program is suffering damage because of that. I think it's important for the Human Services Department to make sure that there is a continuous provision of services to the clients, to the people that are in need. And there was a lot of discussion about what they're planning to do yesterday at the meeting to make sure that there's provision of services. So I think that we're all looking to see if there are ways to ameliorate the impact on the program, and Human Services is looking at the methodologies that they have. We only have the opportunity to investigate these files, and so what I'm doing is trying to accelerate to the extent that we can our investigations. I've added a lot more resources. I've brought investigators from other parts of the agency and stuff to try and look at these 15 cases as expeditiously as we can so that we can try and make a determination as to whether there's actually something there to pursue or not.
And we've learned that the affected providers have applied for a waiver of action against them?
Yes, to the best of my knowledge, I think all 15 agencies have filed good cause letters. I think that yesterday the department said that they had taken action on three of those where they had either lifted the pay hold or done a partial lifting of the pay hold. And on the rest of them, I believe that they have determined that there's not a good cause reason. But I'm not positive about whether they've looked at each of the 15 cases, but as far as I know, all of the agencies have, or all the providers have made that request. And then I think that 8 of the agencies have filed an action in the U.S. Federal District Court to try and get the court to order that that the pay holds be stayed until they have time to make an argument as to why those shouldn't be applied. And that hearing was held yesterday, but the judge has not, to my knowledge, by this morning made a determination. I think the judge said that they would take it under advisement, and it would be a couple of days before a determination would be made there.
And moving forward, can you speak to the timeline your office now must follow?
Well, the investigations can be fairly time-consuming because once the cases come to us, we get potentially thousands of pages of documents that we have to review, and we have forensic auditors and medical auditors who are going to be going through the files and looking at these, and it's hard for me to estimate a timeline right now as to how long it'll take to go through all of those documents, but it's something on the order of months. I don't think that it's something that can be done in a week or two.
And that pending court action, that would not affect the course of your investigation, correct?
No, not at all. Well, once we have the files, you know, we'll pursue an investigation. I think that it's important, once allegations have been raised, that we do a thorough investigation and either clear the agencies of wrongdoing, or if we find instances of fraud. There are two ways that we can pursue that. One is actually a criminal procedure if there's fraud that reaches that level of criminal fraud. A second thing that we can do is bring a civil action to recover monies that were paid inappropriately. And a third, actually, if we don't find that there's something that's actionable by the AG's office, would be to refer it back to the agency. And, for instance, if there was just a clerical error that resulted in payment of money that shouldn't have been paid, then the agency can go back to the providers and say, you know, we found this error, we need you to pay the money back. So there are actually several different things that could occur once we get to the end of the investigation.
Very good, sir. Attorney General Gary King, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR. And taking a look at the downtown Santa Fe temperature at midday, currently 74 degrees on its way to a high of 80, along with a 40% chance for afternoon and evening thundershowers. There's a great opportunity for Santa Fe artists to get their work displayed around town. KSFR news reporter Charles Maynard joins us now and files this report.
Santa Fe is, of course, famous as an art center. Now the city is offering a chance for local artists to have their work seen around town. Deborah Garcia y Griego is the executive director of the City of Santa Fe Arts Commission.
We have issued the call for our annual Art on Loan exhibition. It's the 11th annual exhibition, and it is an opportunity for local artists and local galleries to propose loaned artworks to the City of Santa Fe. If accepted, we will place those artworks on city-owned property for a period of 1 year, and it's just a fantastic opportunity for the local arts community to help increase awareness of the arts, to enliven our city's visual landscape, and also to just get their work out into the community where more members of the public, both visitors and locals, can see it. Most of our locations are outdoor locations, so we look for work that's appropriate for that kind of what we say as unmonitored outdoor display, so public art opportunity. So we see a lot of metalwork, sculptures, stone sculptures, things that really can be outside in the elements and that the public can interact with in a way that's safe for the public and safe for the artwork. We've had a few opportunities to place works indoors, but generally the focus of the program is on outdoor works. We usually do a loan period of about a year. However, we're willing to negotiate a shorter loan or a longer loan, and the art is returned to them. The artists do bear the cost of installation and necessary insurance, but they can also pull the piece at any time if need be. So if a piece sells or is accepted to a show at another museum, they're welcome to just let us know and come and take the piece away. So it's also a great opportunity for us to take a few risks with public art, since it's temporary. If a community really doesn't like it, they can know that it'll go away in a few years or in a few months. On the other hand, we have found that oftentimes the public gets very attached to a piece that's on loan and is disappointed when it goes away. So it's just a great opportunity to experiment with our public art program and to let local artists get their work out into the community.
As this is an ongoing event, there's already art on display around the city.
We currently have 17 pieces on display. Annually, I would say we accept 10 to 12 artists, and then we do allow the opportunity for an artist, if a piece is particularly well-placed and well-received by the community, we will allow them to renew for several years.
There's no fee for submitting. It's easy to get more information on the program and how to submit art.
They can visit our website, which is santafeartscommission.org, and follow the Art in Public Places menu to the Art on Loan program. All the information is there along with the application form and submission requirements. The deadline for this first round of juring is August 5th, and they can also call our office at 505-955-6607 and mention their interest in the loan program, and they'll be connected to a staff member who can assist them with questions about the process.
Deborah Garcia y Griego with the City of Santa Fe Arts Commission.
I would just encourage artists that are perhaps interested in this opportunity but whose work does not fit in a public art setting to explore submitting a portfolio to our community gallery. That information is on the same website, santafeartscommission.org, and they can also call 505-955-6707 and be connected over to the community gallery to see if maybe there's an opportunity for them to participate there.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by PNM, who recently brought the Prosperity Energy Storage Project online. The project allows PNM to store solar energy, helping to provide consistent solar power even on cloudy days. This is the first solar storage plant integrated into the grid in the nation. If you have a question for PNM, you can talk to them on Twitter or Facebook, or visit PNM online at pnm.com.
Support for KSFR comes from Upaya Zen Center, a Zen Buddhist practice, training, and service center for engaged Buddhism. Upaya offers one-hour daily meditation sits to multi-day intensive meditation retreats. August 23rd to 25th, Roshi Joan Halifax and Chokni Rinpoche teach Dzogchen and Zen, exploring the direct experience of mind-heart. To learn more, call 986-8518 or visit upaya.org. That's upaya.org.
12:31 here in the KSFR newsroom, and as we brush the bottom of the hour, it is our custom to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
If I were to utter the following words in my home state of Minnesota, I would probably be lynched or dragged across the ice by an ice boat in a 60-mile-per-hour wind. Makes no difference if it's July, you can always find ice in Minnesota. Those words that would engender such Minnesota ire... I don't get hockey. Ah, someone from Minnesota heard that and is already sending a barrage of barbed ooftas my way. But it's true, notwithstanding my Nordic ancestry and upper Midwest upbringing, I don't get hockey. Now, I understand the sport of hockey and the fun and excitement of watching the sport of hockey, even though sometimes it resembles mixed martial arts on ice. And, of course, that's what a lot of folks like about hockey, the fights, the brutal physical contact. What I don't get about hockey is why anyone would play it for free. I have two friends who play hockey as a hobby, one a man, one a woman. In my mind, playing hockey as an adult without being paid is like skating on thin ice. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's Extended Noon News Hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. And we'll be back with more news of and for New Mexico for you tomorrow. And as always, we hope you join us.